The 100 Years' War, the De Guesclin period, the Franco-Castilian campaign, naval campaign that is, of 1377, continues. The exact movements of the Franco-Castilian fleet cannot be traced behind the generalized lament of the chronicles about the wasting of the south coast of England. The rather sparse evidence that exists suggests that their ships penetrated into the west country as far as Plymouth, but achieved nothing more of note than the sack of Lewes. In the second half of July 1377, they returned to Harfleur to rest their crews, land prisoners and spoil, and take on stores for a second cruise that was expected to last for 6 weeks. Jean de Vienne attended a conference with Charles V and his advisors early in August. It was decided that the main purpose of the second cruise would be support the Duke of Burgundy's operations around Calais, but the Duke's army had not yet mustered for the campaign. In the meantime, therefore, it was proposed to concentrate the fleets against Southampton. As the French and Castilians completed their preparations for the second cruise, the Scots, sensing a new vulnerability in English affairs, began to mount raids in the surviving English enclaves of the Scottish lowlands, in the counties of Cumberland and Northumberland. There was an escalating series of incidents on the border in July of 1377, inflaming tensions on both sides. The man behind these raids was George Dunbar, the Earl of March, the most powerful magnate of the East Lothians, who was then one of the Scots wardens in the East March. Ostensibly, his grievance was the failure of the English to give redress for a brawl at Roxburgh Fair some weeks earlier, in which his chamberlain had been killed. But the timing of the raids and the fact that a French herald had recently been captured on the march suggest that the initiatives may have come from France. Dunbar surrounded Roxburgh before dawn, August 10, 1377. When the sun rose, he broke into the town, massacred the inhabitants, and burned the place to the ground. It was almost certainly his men who ambushed and killed much of the English garrison of Berwick as they rode through the country north of the fortress a few days after this. Sir Thomas Musgrave, the English captain of Berwick, was among the prisoners. Writing to the English government to justify his operations, March threatened to take Berwick. These incidents led to a ferocious and inconclusive sequence of reprisals. Within 2 weeks, Henry Percy, Earl of Northumberland, was harrying Dunbar's lands with several thousand borderers at his back. The escalation of the crisis provoked alarm in Westminster and prayers across the whole of England before a tense truce was eventually restored on the border in the course of September. Percy's first report from the north, which was received at Westminster on August the 19th, coincided with the news of the French and Castilians' army of the sea that had landed on the Isle of Wight. In fact, Jean de Vienne had not planned this. His ships had been driven onto the island by high winds, and his men forced to disembark there. The island was strongly defended, and its garrison had enough warning of the attack to assemble close to the shore. But they lost this advantage by a serious tactical misjudgment. They decided to allow part of the French and Castilian forces to land before attacking them on the beach, in the belief that they could be defeated in detail before the rest had landed. The enemy thwarted this plan by storming the beach with their whole force at once. The defenders found themselves heavily outnumbered. They turned and fled inland. Jean de Vienne's men pursued them, killing and burning as they went. A subsequent royal inquiry found that every substantial settlement in the east and south of the island was utterly burned and destroyed. The only serious resistance was at Crisbrook Castle, principal fortress of the island, where the captain, Sir Hugh Tyrrell, led his garrison in a bold sortie as the enemy approached and inflicted heavy losses on them. He then withdrew behind his walls as they burned the town beneath his nose. After passing several days on the island, the French negotiated the payments of a fee of 1,000 marks, £666, and re-embarked on their ships. The sack of the Isle of Wight was a victory of sorts, but it lost Jean de Vienne whatever chance he had of surprising Southampton. By the time that his ships penetrated into Southampton's water, John of Arundel and Robert Knowles were waiting for him. Their troops had been seen from the ships following them along the shore. A landing was attempted near Southampton, but was repulsed at the water's edge. Another attempt at Poole was frustrated by the troops of the Earl of Salisbury. In the last days of August 1377, the fleet turned east along the coast of Sussex and Kent, where they didn't have any better luck. The French finally succeeded in landing a raiding party at Folkestone on August the 31st. They burned much of the town before they were driven off by local levies under the command of the Abbot of St. Augustine, Canterbury. The Abbot followed along the coast as the ships cruised east towards Dover. The French ships waited for 3 days here looking for a chance to land, but the great fortress at Dover was one of the few castles in England which had actually been kept in proper repair, and there was a large garrison in the walls in addition to the Abbot's host. We cannot know how long the standoff would have continued, but on about September the 3rd, 1377, the Duke of Burgundy invaded the Pas-de-Calais, and the French and Castilian fleets sailed across the Narrows to support his operations from the sea. So we managed to thwart the French to some extent, although the Isle of Wight would certainly not believe that. And now they're going to be working with the Duke of Burgundy at the Pas-de-Calais. But this is going to have serious repercussions within England, which we'll see in our next show. Now the sources for this, the Hundred Years' War, the Chronicles by Froissart, the Hundred Years' War by Perrois, the Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and the Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, SummaHistorica.com or HistoryAccordingToBob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.